Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Climate Crisis and the Global Green New Deal, The Political Economy of Saving the Planet, by Noam Chomsky and Robert Polin. Introduction by C.J. Polychronio. Narrated by James Patrick Cronin. Introduction. Since the origins of civilized social order, the human race has faced a full gamut of severe challenges and deadly threats, ranging from famines and natural disasters, floods, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and so on, to enslavement and wars. In the first half of the 20th century, humanity experienced two world wars and the emergence of the greatest genocidal regime ever. Over the second half of the 20th century, we have lived with the threat of nuclear annihilation hanging over our heads like Damocles' sword. As I write in April 2020, we face the global COVID-19 pandemic and accompanying economic collapse. Nobody knows at this point how many people will die as a result of the pandemic. We also cannot yet know how severe will be the subsequent recession. The signs point to a crisis of at least the severity of the 2007 through 9 Great Recession, and perhaps comparable to the 1930s Depression. Nonetheless, a strong case can be made that humanity faces its greatest existential crisis ever with climate change. That is, trapped carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases resulting, first and foremost, from burning oil, coal, and natural gas to generate energy, are raising average temperatures in all regions of the globe. The consequences of a hotter planet include increasing incidences of heat extremes, heavy precipitation, droughts, sea level increases, biodiversity losses, and corresponding impacts on health, livelihoods, food security, water supply, and human security. Meanwhile, climate denialism maintains a strong grip over much of the human race, especially in the United States. This is due in part to the fossil fuel industry's relentless propaganda and obfuscation campaigns over decades. It is also linked to the unlikely outcome of Donald Trump, the climate denier-in-chief, somehow making it into the White House with his November 2016 election victory over Hillary Clinton. President Trump has gone so far as to declare global warming a hoax and to pull the United States out of the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement, which was endorsed by 195 countries, including the United States under Barack Obama. Still, one cannot deny the impact that fear of the unknown and the potential loss of jobs may be exerting on people when they resist the reality of global warming. This is exactly why it is so important that any plan to effectively combat the climate crisis must include provisions that ensure workers are able to make a fair transition to a carbon-free economy. More specifically, any version of the widely discussed Green New Deal project must include these priorities. 1. Greenhouse gas emissions reductions will at least achieve the targets set in 2018 by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, namely, a 45% reduction in global emissions by 2030 and the attainment of net zero emissions by 2050. 2. Investments to dramatically raise energy efficiency standards and equally dramatically expand the supply of solar, wind, and other clean, renewable energy sources will form the leading edge of the transition to a green economy in all regions of the world. 3. The green economy transition will not expose workers in the fossil fuel industry and other vulnerable groups to the plague of joblessness and the anxieties of economic insecurity. 4. Economic growth must proceed along a sustainable and egalitarian path, such that climate stabilization is unified with the equally important goals of expanding job opportunities and raising mass living standards for working people and the poor throughout the world. A global Green New Deal that includes these four priorities is, in fact, the only viable solution available to us if we hope to avoid the catastrophic repercussions of persistently rising average global temperatures. Given the absence of such a coherent Green New Deal program, all international climate summits that have occurred thus far, including the 25th UN-sponsored Conference of the Parties, COP25, held in Madrid in December 2019, have failed to put the world onto a viable climate stabilization path. Even the much-celebrated COP21 conference in Paris in 2015 mainly produced another round of ritual inaction. Because of these failures, the world is already hotter by over 1 degree Celsius, 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels, and on its way to 1.5 degrees Celsius, 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit warmer, within another decade or two. The catastrophic consequences that will result from unchecked climate change are described in detail in the analyses found in this book by its two authors, Noam Chomsky and Robert Pollin. Noam Chomsky, of course, has been the world's leading public intellectual for more than half a century now. He is also the father of modern linguistics. His work in that field has exerted tremendous influence in a wide variety of other fields, including mathematics, philosophy, psychology, and computer science. Robert Pollin is a world-renowned progressive economist who has been a leader fighting on behalf of an egalitarian green economy for more than a decade. He has produced a large number of important publications, as well as commissioned studies on implementing Green New Deal programs in countries around the world, as well as multiple U.S. states. He also served as a consultant to the U.S. Energy Department on implementing the green investment components of the 2009 American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the Obama Economic Stimulus Program that included $90 billion in funding for investments in renewable energy and energy efficiency. The Global Green New Deal program that Pollin outlines in this book is strongly endorsed by Chomsky. Pollin shows how all four criteria listed earlier for such a program are readily achievable when considered strictly in terms of the technical and economic obstacles to be overcome. Beyond all such technical and economic challenges, the most daunting obstacle to success is mounting the necessary political will to defeat the gigantic vested interests and resources of the global fossil fuel industry. This book includes four chapters. Chapter 1, titled The Nature of Climate Change, begins by situating the challenge of global warming alongside other crises that the human race has faced in the past. The chapter then offers detailed critiques on an array of major questions, such as why market-driven proposals to tackle the climate crisis are doomed to failure, and why alternatives to industrial agriculture are of immense importance to reaching a viable climate stabilization path. Chapter 2, titled Capitalism and the Climate Crisis, presents clear theoretical and empirical discussions of the connections between capitalism, environmental destruction, and the climate crisis. It also offers valuable insights on whether capitalists' werewolf hunger for profits can be in any way reconciled with the imperative of stabilizing the climate. This chapter also examines the reasons why political action has thus far failed to make significant advances in tackling the crisis. Chapter 3, titled A Global Green New Deal, describes the program that is needed to achieve a successful transition to a green economy. Pollin sketches out what a global Green New Deal entails and how it can be financed. He also describes the ways through which such a program can become a bulwark against the long-term rise of inequality that has prevailed under 40 years of global neoliberalism. Pollin also provides a critical assessment of the European Union's own plan for what it has termed its European Green Deal. Chomsky then closes the chapter by considering the nightmarish scenario of millions of people from the global south trying to migrate to the high-income countries of the global north as the catastrophic effects of global warming intensify with time. The fourth and last chapter of the book is titled Political Mobilization to Save the Planet. It addresses questions such as how the climate crisis might affect the global balance of power, whether eco-socialism has the potential as a politico-ideological vision to mobilize people in the struggle to create a green future, and what the connections are between climate change and the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic. The overarching question that animates this chapter is the most basic one. What needs to be done to advance a successful political mobilization on behalf of a global Green New Deal? In my view, this little book that you are listening to right now is critically important. There should be food for thought in it for everyone, scholars, activists, and lay people alike. Of course, it is only one modest contribution toward a public dialogue that must continue to expand until it reaches all levels of society in all regions of the globe. Pushing that global dialogue forward, even by a small amount, is the least we all owe to the next generations. With that in mind, I wish to extend my most heartfelt thanks and deepest gratitude to Noam Chomsky and Robert Polin for allowing me to travel with them on this journey to help inform the public about how we can all save the planet. C.J. Polychronio, April 2020. 1. The Nature of Climate Change. Over the last couple of decades, the challenge of climate change has emerged as perhaps the most serious existential crisis facing humanity, but at the same time, as the most difficult public issue for governments worldwide. Noam, given what we know so far about the science of climate change, how would you summarize the climate change crisis vis-a-vis other crises that humanity has faced in the past? Noam Chomsky. We cannot overlook the fact that humans today are facing awesome problems that are radically unlike any that have arisen before in human history. They have to answer the question whether organized human society can survive in any recognizable form, and the answers cannot be long delayed. The tasks ahead are indeed new and dire. History is all too rich in records of horrendous wars, indescribable torture, massacres, and every imaginable abuse of fundamental rights. But the threat of destruction of organized human life in any recognizable or tolerable form, that is entirely new. It can only be overcome by common efforts of the entire world, though of course responsibility is proportional to capacity, and elementary moral principles demand that a special responsibility falls on those who have been primarily responsible for creating the crises over centuries, enriching themselves while creating a grim fate for humanity. These issues arose dramatically on August 6, 1945. Though the Hiroshima bomb itself, despite its horrendous effects, did not threaten human survival, it was apparent that the genie was out of the bottle, and that technological developments would soon reach that stage, as they did in 1953 with the explosion of thermonuclear weapons. That led to the setting of the doomsday clock by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists at 2 minutes to midnight, meaning global termination, a dread setting to which it returned after Trump's first year in office, describing the next year as the new abnormal. Prematurely. In January 2020, thanks largely to Trump's leadership, the clock was moved closer to midnight than ever before. 100 seconds, dropping minutes for seconds. I won't run through the grim record, but anyone who does will recognize that it is a near miracle that we have survived thus far, and the race to self-destruction is now accelerating. There have been efforts to avert the worst, with some success, notably 4 major arms control treaties: ABM, INF, Open Skies, and New Start. The Bush 2 administration withdrew from the ABM treaty in 2002. The Trump administration withdrew from the INF treaty in August 2019, timing its withdrawal almost exactly with Hiroshima Day. It has also indicated that it will not maintain the Open Skies or New Start treaties. That will mean that all bars are down and we can race toward terminal war. The general reasoning, if one can use that word for total madness, is illustrated by the U.S. withdrawal from the INF Treaty, followed predictably by Russia's own withdrawal. This major treaty was negotiated by Reagan and Gorbachev in 1987, greatly reducing the threat of war in Europe, which would quickly become global, hence terminal. The U.S. claims that Russia is violating the treaty, as the media regularly report, failing, however, to add that Russia claims that the U.S. is violating the treaty, a claim taken seriously enough by U.S. scientists that the authoritative Bulletin of Atomic Scientists devoted a major article to expounding it. In a sane world, the two sides would move to diplomacy, bringing in outside experts to evaluate the claims, and then reaching a settlement, as Reagan and Gorbachev did in 1987. In an insane world, the treaty would be abrogated and both sides would merrily proceed to develop new and even more dangerous and destabilizing weapons, such as hypersonic missiles, against which there is no currently imaginable defense. If there are defenses against any major weapons systems, a dubious prospect. Our world. Like the INF Treaty, the Open Skies Treaty was a Republican initiative. The idea was proposed by President Eisenhower and implemented by President George H.W. Bush, Bush 1. That was the pre-Gingrich Republican Party, still a sane political organization. Two respected political analysts of the American Enterprise Institute, Thomas Mann and Norman Ornstein, described the Republican Party since Newt Gingrich's takeover in the 90s as not a normal political party, but a radical insurgency that has largely abandoned parliamentary politics. Under Mitch McConnell's leadership, that has only become more evident, but he has ample company in party circles. The abrogation of the INF Treaty elicited little reaction apart from in arms control circles, but not everyone is looking the other way. The military industry can scarcely conceal its delight over the huge new contracts to develop means to destroy everything, and the more far-sighted are also developing longer-term plans to gain fat contracts to develop possible, if unlikely, means of defense against the monstrosities they are now free to develop. The Trump administration wasted no time in flaunting its abrogation of the treaty. Within a few weeks, the Pentagon tersely announced the successful launching of an intermediate-range missile violating the INF Treaty, virtually inviting others to join in, with all of the obvious consequences. Former Defense Secretary William Perry, who has spent much of his career on nuclear issues and is not given to exaggerated rhetoric, declared some time ago that he was terrified. In fact, doubly terrified, both by the increasing threat of war and the slight attention it receives. We should, in fact, be triply terrified, adding that the race to terminal destruction is being carried out by people who are fully aware of the horrendous consequences of what they are doing. Much the same is true of their dedicated efforts to destroy the environment that can sustain life. The net spreads wide. It is not just the policymakers, the Trump administration being particularly egregious and dangerous. It reaches to the big banks that are pouring money into fossil fuel extraction, and the editors of the best journals running article after article about the wondrous new technology that has propelled the U.S. to the lead in producing the substances which will destroy us unless radically curbed, all without mention of the terrible word, climate. Scientists seeking extraterrestrial intelligence have been struck by the Fermi paradox. Where are they? Astrophysics suggests that there should be intelligent life elsewhere. Maybe they are right. There really is intelligent life, and when it discovers the strange inhabitants of planet Earth, it has the sense to stay far away. Let's keep, however, to the second major threat to survival, environmental catastrophe. It was not understood at the time, but the early post-World War II period marked a turning point in a second threat to survival. Geologists generally take the early post-World War II period to be the onset of the Anthropocene, a new geological epoch in which human activity is having a profound and devastating impact on the environment. A judgment on timing confirmed most recently in May 2019 by the Working Group on the Anthropocene. By now, evidence of the severity and imminence of the threat is overwhelming, and is quietly recognized even by the most extreme deniers, as we see in a minute. How are the two existential crises related? A simple answer is given by Australian climate scientist Andrew Glickson. Climate scientists are no longer alone in having to cope with the global emergency, whose implications have reached the defense establishment, yet the world continues to spend near to $1.8 trillion each year on the military, a resource that needs to be diverted to the protection of life on Earth. As the portents for major conflicts in the China Sea, Ukraine, and the Middle East are rising, who will defend the Earth? Who indeed? Climate scientists are certainly paying close attention and issuing frank and explicit warnings. Oxford professor of physics Raymond Pierre Humbert, a lead author of the frightening 2018 Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC report, since superseded by more urgent warnings, opens his review of existing circumstances and options by writing, "Let's get this on the table right away without mincing words. With regard to the climate crisis, yes, it's time to panic. We are in deep trouble." He then lays out the details carefully and scrupulously, reviewing the possible technical fixes and their very serious problems, concluding that there's no plan B. We must move to zero net carbon emissions, and fast. The deep concerns of climate scientists are readily available to those who don't prefer to hide their heads in the sand. CNN celebrated Thanksgiving 2019 with a detailed and accurate report of an important study that had just appeared in Nature on tipping points, moments at which the dire effects of global warming will become irreversible. The authors conclude that consideration of tipping points and their interactions reveals that we are in a climate emergency and strengthens this year's chorus of calls for urgent climate action. The risk and urgency of the situation are acute. The stability and resilience of our planet is in peril. International action, not just words, must reflect this. The authors warn further that atmospheric CO2 is already at levels last seen around 4 million years ago, in the Pliocene epoch. It is rapidly heading towards levels last seen some 50 million years ago, in the Eocene, when temperatures were up to 14 degrees Celsius higher than they were in pre-industrial times. And what happened over very long periods then is now compressed by human action to a few years. They explain further that existing forecasts, while grim enough, have failed to take into account the effects of tipping points. They conclude that the intervention time left to prevent tipping could already have shrunk towards zero, whereas the reaction time to achieve net zero emissions is 30 years at best. Hence, we might already have lost control of whether tipping happens. A saving grace is that the rate at which damage accumulates from tipping, and hence the risk posed, could still be under our control to some extent. To some extent, and there is no time to lose. Meanwhile, the world watches as we proceed toward a catastrophe of unimaginable proportions. We are approaching perilously close to the global temperatures of 120,000 years ago, when sea levels were 6 to 9 meters higher than today. Truly unimaginable prospects, even discounting the effect of more frequent and violent storms, which will put paid to whatever wreckage is left. One of many ominous developments that might fill the gap between 120,000 years ago and today is the melting of the vast West Antarctic ice sheet. Glaciers are sliding into the sea 5 times faster than in the 1990s, with more than 100 meters of ice thickness lost in some areas due to ocean warming, and those losses doubling every decade. Complete loss of the West Antarctic ice sheet would raise sea levels by about 5 meters, drowning coastal cities, and with utterly devastating effects elsewhere. The low-lying plains of Bangladesh, for example. Only one of the many concerns of those who are paying attention to what is happening before our eyes. Dire warnings from climate scientists abound. Israeli climatologist Baruch Rinkevich captures the general mood succinctly. After us, the deluge, as the saying goes. People don't fully understand what we're talking about here. They don't understand that everything is expected to change. The air we breathe, the food we eat, the water we drink, the landscapes we see, the oceans, the seasons, the daily routine, the quality of life. Our children will have to adapt or become extinct. That's not for me. I'm happy I won't be here. Rinkevich and his Israeli colleagues discuss various likely horror scenarios for Israel, but a few are optimistic. One observes that Israel is definitely not the Maldives, and it is not expected to be submerged anytime soon. Good news. They generally agree, however, that the region may become mostly unlivable. Cities are liable to be abandoned in Iran, Iraq, and in developing countries, but in our country it will be possible to live. And although the temperature of the Mediterranean may approach 40 degrees Celsius, that is, 104 degrees Fahrenheit, the maximum permitted temperature in a jacuzzi, nevertheless, humans will not be boiled alive like sea urchins and red-mouthed rock shells, but there could be mortal danger during the height of the bathing season. So there is hope for Israel under the most optimistic forecasts, if not for the region. The essential observation is made by Professor Alon Tal. We are aggravating the condition of the planet. The Jewish state has looked humanity's ultimate challenge in the eyes and said, forget it. What will we tell our children? That we wanted a higher quality of living? That we had to remove all the natural gas from the sea because it was so economically profitable? Those are pathetic explanations. We're talking about the most fateful issue there is, especially in the Mediterranean basin, and the government of Israel isn't capable of appointing a minister who cares that we are simply going to be cooked. Tal's comment is correct and deeply troubling. What is it about humans that makes them able to accept pathetic explanations or just say forget it while looking humanity's ultimate challenge in the eyes? That's the response, whether it is gradual impending environmental catastrophe or the opportunity to construct new means to destroy us all at once. What is it about humans that enables them to spend $1.8 trillion on the military, the U.S. far in the lead, while not asking, who will defend the Earth? While Tal's observation generalizes, it is somewhat too strong. There are countries and localities where serious efforts are being undertaken to act before it is too late. And it is not too late. The answer to the mad race to produce more means of self-destruction is obvious enough, at least in words. Implementation is another matter. And there is still time to mitigate the impending climate catastrophe if a firm commitment is undertaken. That is surely not impossible if the facts can be faced. In 1941, the U.S. faced a serious, though incomparably lesser threat, and responded with a voluntary mass mobilization so overwhelming that it greatly impressed Nazi Germany's economic czar, Albert Speer, who lamented that totalitarian Germany could not match the voluntary subordination to the national task in the more free societies. Some estimate that the challenge, while immense, does not impose burdens comparable to those of 1941. Economist Jeffrey Sachs, in a careful study, concludes that, contrary to some commentaries, decarbonization will not require a grand mobilization of the U.S. economy on par with World War II. The incremental costs of decarbonization above our normal energy costs will amount to 1-2% of U.S. GDP per year during the period to 2050. By contrast, during World War II, federal outlays soared to 43% of GDP from the pre-war level of 10% of GDP in 1940. It can be done. But now we face a cruel irony of history. Just at the time when all must act together with dedication to confront humanity's ultimate challenge, the leaders of the most powerful state in human history, in full awareness of what they are doing, are dedicating themselves with passion to radical escalation of the twin threats to survival. The government is in the hands of the only major conservative party in the world that rejects the need to tackle climate change and is also opening the door to the development of new and more threatening weapons of mass destruction. The members of the astonishing troika who have the fate of the world in their hands are the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, and the Chief. From the perspective of the world, the Godfather. International relations resemble the Mafia to an extent rarely recognized. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is an evangelical Christian whose acuity as a political analyst is revealed by his belief that God may have sent Trump to the world to save Israel from Iran. The National Security Advisor, until his September 2019 resignation, or firing, depending on whom you choose to believe, was John Bolton, who has left his minions in place. Bolton had a simple doctrine. The U.S. must accept no external limits on its freedom of action, no treaties, no international agreements or conventions, and therefore must ensure that every country will have maximal opportunity to develop the means to destroy us all. The U.S. in the lead, for what that's worth. He also flaunts a corollary, bomb Iran because it will never agree to negotiate on anything. This prescription for action and predication was confidently issued while Iran was negotiating with the U.S. and Europe on the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, the detailed agreement finalized shortly after freezing Iranian nuclear activities. an agreement observed meticulously by Iran, as U.S. intelligence and others confirm, and torn up by the chief.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?